This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Yesterday was a big day in the State General Assembly. Any bill not related to tax changes or spending had to pass at least one chamber by last night, or it was basically dead. Well, that's not quite true. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But lawmakers did try to rush a slew of bills through the House and the Senate this week. Topics ranged from abortion to workers' rights to energy efficiency. WRAL Media investigative reporter Mark Binker joins us to bring us up to date. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, or afternoon, I should say.
It's just afternoon. And so tell us a little bit. We talked about crossover. Tell us what that is.
Basically, it's a deadline that legislators impose upon themselves to try to impose a little discipline upon the chaos. And basically what they say is anything that's not related to raising money or spending money has to pass by a date certain. That date certain was yesterday. And it's basically a way to kind of limit the amount of subjects you're going to take on during any one particular term. And really, you know, in terms of the legislative calendar, we're really turning towards the point now where they're going to have to deal with budget and taxes, and they want to focus in and drill in on those subjects. And this deadline sort of helps them weed out the peripheral issues and decide, okay, well, these things we'll deal with and everything else will have to wait.
And when you say pass, you don't mean final legislative approval. You mean passed one house or the other. So it's viable by that standard, in other words.
Yeah, and basically remain eligible for the 2-year biennium. So the remainder of this year and when they come back to do what's called the short session next year. One of the big pastimes that they'll go on now is trying to figure out how to circumvent the crossover rules. But by and large, if it's something that didn't spend money or raise money and it's not passed one house or the other, it's considered out of the running.
But it could find its way into the legislature or into the consideration process by other means. For instance,
multiple ways. It could be put into what's called a study bill during the interim. It could be dropped into a bill that's returning to its house of origin. Any number of ways, but you sort of need cooperation from legislative leaders to do that. Again, this is a way for leadership to kind of throttle back the number of subjects that they're considering.
All right, let's take a look at what made it and what didn't. Some of the more controversial ones include a bill that would allow insurers in health exchanges to deny coverage for abortion. Tell us how that played out.
Well, this was a bill that sort of got a hearing on Wednesday, if I'm keeping all my days straight this week, and it originally came out, it had a provision in it that was related to contraception coverage as well as abortion coverage. That contraception piece actually was a bridge too far for some of the conservative Republicans in the General Assembly, so it was taken out. And what the bill does now is it says for health plans offered under the health exchange that is going to be created under the Affordable Care Act, what some people would call Obamacare, those health plans cannot offer abortion coverage. Or at least elective abortion coverage. And it also says to cities and counties, if you offer health insurance plans to your employees, you won't have abortion coverage that's greater than what's offered to state employees right now.
Right, that one's still alive. Also, legislation that changed some of the grievance process for state employees. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, this is something that Governor Pat McCrory has asked for. It's basically giving him more flexibility to hire and fire state workers. And one of the objections that folks in the State Employees Union has raised is that it basically does, you don't have as robust a grievance process if you think that you have been passed over for a promotion or otherwise hurt in your job process. If you think, oh, well, the reason I got passed over or not promoted was because this person is politically connected, they feel that some of the protections that currently exist would be undone by this bill. And they say, look, this is basically a way to allow for more patronage in government. The folks arguing for the bill, Jeff Collins, his primary sponsor in the McCrory administration, says, no, we need better ways to manage our workforce. We need to be more flexible, and this is part of doing that.
Well, it removes some of the protections, but also changes the adjudication process. It used to be a judge who would oversee these. Now it will be a political appointee. So who's ever in charge politically has appointed the person who oversees that process.
Well,
if it passes.
And the advocates for the bill would say, look, this is a streamlining of a process that right now can take months, if not more than a year, to finally dispose of a case of somebody who's grieving a job action. That's too long for the government to be sitting there paying somebody who's either not on the job or not on the job at full capacity. Basically, the advocates for the bill say that they need to be able to dispose of these cases more quickly.
And the opponents would say, but if the politician who I'm complaining about is the one who appointed the judge, I may not be getting a fair hearing.
There is always sort of the question of, you know, can you be a judge in your own cause, I guess.
So there you go. That one's still on the floor. Talking about legislation in the General Assembly, I want to turn now to two state lawmakers. Democratic Senator Mike Woodard is here. He represents Durham, Caswell, and Person counties. Senator Woodard, good to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be here.
Also with us, Republican Representative Paul Stamm, the House Speaker pro tem. He represents Wake County. Representative Stamm, good to talk with you.
Hey, good afternoon.
Let me talk with you first. Now, the Republicans this session have targeted some environmental standards. There's a Senate bill that would repeal water quality standards for Jordan Lake, another Senate bill that would lift a moratorium on fracking, and a House bill that rolls back state-mandated energy efficiency standards. Do you see these as a package? What's behind this push to weaken environmental protection?
Well, that first one, I'm not sure I'm in favor of that. I live in the area that drinks that water.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the fracking one. All it does is just fix some things in last year's bill. I mean, it's not a major issue. Now, the efficiency standards, that's going back to the 2009 standards because our housing sector is hurting, and we just need to pay attention to building some houses more so than dealing with the outer limits of efficiency.
Well, let me ask you about those, Senator Woodard.
Well, I'm glad to hear Representative Stamm standing with us on the Jordan Lake rules. That's something, as a member of the Durham City Council, I worked on for 7 years when the draft first came out, and we began implementing those in Durham. And it does affect drinking water for over 300,000 residents here in the central part of the state. So I was opposed to repealing those. And I'm glad that our colleagues in Wake County are joining us on that. I think that's not all a good thing. The fracking thing, I think, is a little more, though, than just fixing things in last year's bill. It allows oil companies to begin exploring now before we've heard from our Mining and Energy Commission about the rules. And I just think we've moved the cart before the horse here.
Well, what I should have said, Senator Woodard, is by the time it's passes the House, it'll just be fixing some things in last year's bill.
Okay. Well, let me ask you both, and I'll start with you, Representative Stamm. I mean, are you convinced that we know enough about fracking? And I know there was a rule change, for instance. I think the Mining Commission had decided that it was going to, and in fact it recommended, that fracking companies, that gas companies, reveal all of the chemicals that are used in the process, and that was stripped out by the chair of that commission. Are you convinced that we know enough about fracking and that we'll know enough about what's going into that water and what's coming out to move forward with fracking without more study?
We will know before fracking, hydraulic fracturing, is actually authorized. Last year's bill doesn't actually authorize anybody to do it, just begin the study. I think that people have lost a little perspective on this. The place where there's a whole lot more natural gas is off the outer continental shelf, way beyond where you could even see from Cape Hatteras. But that's probably where we're going to get a lot more of our natural gas than onshore.
Well, let me ask you about, first of all, Senator Woodard, are you comfortable that we're going to know enough by the time fracking may get started?
I'm not, and I guess that's where we just have a basic disagreement about this. I've talked with a number of scientists even here in the Research Triangle Park. I spent an afternoon with a group of them. There, you know, the science isn't there yet.
Let me ask you, too, about something that Representative Stamm said with regard to, you know, this industry. Housing industry is hurting. These energy standards make it more expensive to build houses and buildings. Is this a good time to soften up a little bit, get the economy going again, then revisit environmental regulation?
It is, because the consumer always has a choice. You know, would I rather pay more now to use less energy 10, 15 years from now.
Well, Senator Wittert, let me ask.
It doesn't prohibit buyers from demanding, you know, solar houses. I live in a passive solar house. Nobody passed a law making me do it. I just chose to do it.
Senator Wittert, do we need the standard?
Yeah, I'm not sure we do. And this gets to one of the fundamental issues I think we're facing in a lot of the legislation that the House and Senate have considered thus far is taking away the local control and the community standards. If you look at the regulatory reform bill that my chamber passed and sent over to the House that I opposed, a lot of these things are putting state standards on things that we've done locally, and they remove the local government's ability to set those standards. You know, if a county in the mountains or down on the coast wants to do something different than what we do here in, say, Durham County, maybe they should be able to do that. They're taking away that local government's ability to set those kind of standards. And I certainly wouldn't want to limit Representative Stam's ability to live in a solar house or a LEED certified house. If that's what he chooses to do, then let's let him work that out with his local government.
Well, let's talk. We're going to take a break right here, and then we'll come back and talk more about that as our conversation about what's going on in the North Carolina legislature continues with WRAL multimedia investigative reporter Mark Brinker. It's Mark Brinker, in fact, and House Speaker Pro Tem Paul Stam, a Republican, a House member, Democratic Senator Mike Woodard, all with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, today talking about the current legislative session in the General Assembly. Yesterday was crossover deadline, a point by which bills had to pass at least one chamber to survive. WRAL multimedia investigative reporter Mark Brinker is with us. Also joining us, Republican Representative Paul Stam, who represents Wake County, and Democratic Senator Mike Woodard represents Durham-Caswell. In person counties, and before the break, we were talking about this move toward less local control and more state and regional control. Representative Stam, one of the bills that survived is one that would take away the control of school buildings from local school boards and give them to county commissions, but not all county commissions, just 9 or 10 or so at the moment, Wake County being chief among them. What's behind that legislation?
Sure. We know that the vast majority of county commissioners have experience in business, whereas the vast majority of school board members have experience in education but not business. We know that counties are required to carry on their books their debt for all the bonds for these schools, but if they own them, they don't get, if the school board owns the asset, the county doesn't get to carry the value of the schools on their books as an asset. So it's a financial problem. And we have had real problems in Wake County with the school board making some horrendous decisions on how much to pay for land. I could give you an example where they're about to pay twice as much for land as what it's worth. Later on, we were able to get it for half the price because the county commissioners had some common sense. So it's just allocating to one local group from a different local group that typically, school boards typically are elected in odd year elections where 10% of the people vote, whereas county commissioners generally are elected in even number years when most people vote.
Senator Woodard?
There's always the argument about boards of county commissioners being more predominantly business people. But remember, the authority is delegated to the staff you hire for either your county government or your school government. And again, I can think of examples throughout the triangle where you've got good, smart, business-oriented people making these decisions for the school board. And the school board's not going to sit there, or the county commissioners are not going to sit there and negotiate with that landowner. They're going to delegate that authority to the county manager or the superintendent and his or her staff people. So it's not like that businessman who's on the Board of County Commissioners is going to negotiate that price.
Mark Pinker, let me ask you, this legislation is interesting in that it doesn't cover all of the counties or school boards in the state, but just a few. Tell us about that.
Covers about 9 or 10, and that was a change made at the last minute, perhaps, and I wasn't following this bill hugely closely, but it seems to deal with the larger urban counties at this point. Now, if one could take a view that it's aimed at counties where perhaps Democrats or people with Democratic Party affiliations dominate the school boards and don't dominate the county commission.
Representative Stam, finish, and then I want to hear from you.
As a quick aside, if there is a concern about county commissioners being elected in even year elections versus odd number year elections, Senator Hunt of Wake County actually has a bill in to change that, at least as far as Wake County goes.
But, all right, Representative Stam.
Yeah, this didn't used to be partisan. So, for example, just a very few years ago, the Wake County Commission unanimously requested this, all Republicans and Democrats. The Mecklenburg County Commissioners, I think are all Democrat, or at least majority, and they requested this. And the Association of County Commissioners, which is half Republican, half Democrat, this is one of their chief goals. So whereas it may currently in Wake County be Republican versus Democrat, this is not a partisan issue.
But why not all the counties and districts in the state then, if it's that good an idea?
Well, we would prefer it that way, but sometimes you have to limit things to get a bill passed.
That's
practical.
And following up on that, Frank, what you heard from a lot of boards of county commissioners. I can tell you the three boards of county commissioners I represent all came to me and said, no, we don't want this. We don't stand with our association on this. We don't want to be able to do this. And they're in agreement with their school boards. You know, I've heard since January 30th, right onto today, elections have consequences. And we're seeing that in Raleigh with overwhelming Republican majorities in both houses and, of course, with Governor McCrory. But at the local level, when elections come and you'll see one party in and the other party has the ability to do something in Raleigh, those elections aren't having consequences. The consequence that's coming is change the legislation. That's what we're seeing in Wake County. And again, Representative Stam knows this better than I, but I've seen the Democratic and Republican majorities drift on both Board of County Commissioners and the school board. And when it shifts another way, somebody goes around the General Assembly and files a bill.
Well, and to the larger issue of where does this authority lie at the local level, at the most local level, school board, county commission, let's take a look at Dorothea Dix. Again, the state has told the city of Raleigh that your 10 years of negotiations are now out the window. Go back to the table. Representative Stam, you said you're not going to stand for the lowering of water quality standards in Jordan Lake, even though your caucus is behind it. And they made some good economic arguments. They said,
well,
look,
I don't know that my caucus is behind it. That's the House has not considered that.
The House, but in the Senate. Well, and they made, but forgive me for one moment, they made a pretty good economic argument. And they said, look, this is hurting development along there, and we've got to make this economic decision. And you're looking at the clean water saying, shouldn't that decision lie with us here in the region? So I guess the larger question is, how much of this legislation is being done in Raleigh for the whole state that perhaps should be left at the local level?
General subject, the Senate's Regulatory Reform Act, that I think it's 612, Senator Walters, that reduces the ability of local governments to regulate land in some cases, okay? But it also empowers owners of property. And I'll just give you an example. The state, based on a real study, decided that you needed 50 feet of riparian buffer along streams, you know, in the Neuse River Basin. But a lot of local governments decided, well, if 50 feet is good, 100 foot must be better, or in one case I know of, 150 foot must be even better yet, even though there's no science to base that on. So if we say, no, local governments, you've overstepped your authority to regulate development based on environmental protection, that's empowering the owners of property. It's not taking power to the state. It's right. empowering individuals.
All right, Senator Witter.
Well, and I think I'm glad you raised that one, Representative Stam, because you know, you're taking away that community standard. In Durham, we went through this. I chaired a committee for a year and a half we had development community represented equally with environmental community, neighborhood interest. We went through our unified development ordinance and hard-fought battles, and we worked through this for 18 months, and we proposed 8 changes to our unified development ordinance that in some cases increased those riparian buffers where we thought it was necessary. And we moved them beyond 50 feet in a number of cases. And those passed at local government levels because that's what our community agreed to. Now, people in Raleigh, with a majority vote from the other 99 counties, are going to come in and tell us after a year and a half of hard work on our unified development ordinance, you got to tighten those back to 50. You're losing that community standard.
Well, let's move on a little bit. I want to talk about
is depreciate the value of some people, like a owner of a couple acres. You've taken the value of their land from $100,000 down to $20,000 with your local standards.
Well, and if that person had that grievance, then they should be talking to their city council or their county commissioners and work it out at the local level.
Let's talk about tax reform. Two very different proposals, one in the House and one in the Senate. The House reform proposal would drop income tax rate to a flat 5.9%. Right now, depending on the person, that's anywhere from 6. At the moment, it is anywhere from 6 to 7.5%. Corporate rate would fall from 6.9 to 6.7%. Those are different than in the Senate. How do you see these measures working out, Representative Stam?
I vastly prefer the House version, but there is a feature of the Senate version that I like a lot, and I hope we'll adopt it. We could reduce our rates a lot if we would do as the Senate does and get rid of a lot of these targeted tax expenditures that make no sense economically.
Like what?
Well, the refundable tax credit where for films where we're sending checks to Hollywood producers, and our fiscal staff tells us for that year about $45 million. We got about 70 new jobs. It's a complete waste of money. But if we would get rid of that kind of thing, we could reduce the marginal rate of personal income tax and corporate income tax quite a bit.
Senator Witter, how do you feel about these proposals?
Well, it won't surprise you. Neither one really excites me, but the House version is less bad than the Senate version. But I think we've got to have a lot of conversation about this. No one argues that we've got to change and broaden the tax base. I appreciate the House looking at this and broadening it in less damaging ways. But it's a shell game. You're moving a lot of the tax burden onto middle class and middle income and lower income families. You're moving it away from our wealthiest citizens. You're moving it away from corporations. In either proposal, you're looking at $1 billion plus having to be cut out of the budget. And at a time when we ought to be investing more in education, more in job preparedness, more in helping our rural communities regain some of the economic drivers they've lost over the last decade, this is not the time to be making those kind of huge cuts.
Representative
Sim? That would not be the case in the House plan because we expand the personal exemptions so much, it really doesn't impact the lower income folks, and it's $1 billion in cuts, but that's over 5 years, so that's only two. In the percentage of the budget, that's like 1% of the budget.
Well, it does raise a number of interesting questions. Two different proposals. We're not going to go through all the details here. We're going to talk about that. But one of the more interesting features of this bill is how it has attracted national attention, and it would appear as though the state of North Carolina is headed toward a zero income tax, at least according to Grover Norquist, who's the president and founder of Americans for Tax Reform. He was here yesterday at a press conference. He was working with House and Senate leaders on their tax reform proposals, and here's what he has to say about corporate and personal income tax here.
And I think if you tell businesses both in North Carolina, you can plan that we'll be at zero. If you tell people who'd like to invest in North Carolina and create jobs here, we're heading towards zero. You don't have to get to zero tomorrow in order to have the economic benefits that right now Texas and Florida and Tennessee already have without being burdening their citizens with a income tax. And if one wonders, how could one ever not have an income tax? Haven't we always had an income tax in North Carolina? Obviously, North Carolina did very well for many years without an income tax. And there are other states, very successful states, states with significantly lower unemployment rates that do not have income taxes and prosper and create jobs as a result.
That's Grover Norquist, who is president of Americans for Tax Reform in Raleigh yesterday, working with House and Senate leaders on tax reform, held a news conference. Paul Stamm, are we moving toward, is this the first step in eliminating income tax in North Carolina?
Well, we did need to lower the rate because our highest marginal rate on both personal and corporate income tax was sticking out like a sore thumb. For the Southeast, it was very non-competitive, so this gets us competitive. You know, a lot of the talk about ending the income tax, of course, is then putting it on sales tax. And I think a lot of people don't realize that a tax on sales is really a tax on income, on gross income, as opposed to a tax on net income.
Sure, it's a regressive
tax. Money
doesn't
magically appear without income. Yeah. It's just a different way to calculate it.
Senator Woodard, let's talk about the idea that if for one reason or another we have to reduce taxes by either $1 or $1.2 billion. I think Senator Woodard, you were heading toward the idea that we have priorities and public spending could be an engine for economic development. Not all spending is just spending; it's actually somebody else's income, isn't it? And so, is there a way in which we should be spending more and not less in the state, or receiving more income?
Yeah, again, we haven't seen the Senate Republican caucus budget yet, but in the governor's budget, you know, I look at reduced spending in our university system, in our community colleges. Community colleges are on the front line of being economic drivers, economic development opportunities all across the state, 58 of our community colleges. And, you know, you're seeing pretty significant cuts in the governor's budget. Again, we wait to see what the Senate budget is and how that comes out of conference when the House and Senate get together later. But that's just one example of where we're cutting spending. Durham Technical Community College, with the new funding scheme proposed by the governor, would lose over $2 million. Piedmont Community College is over $1 million in this biennium. And that's a case where we need to continue our – at least maintain it. But, you know, don't cut – at a time when these are the institutions that are providing job training opportunities, support for our small businesses. That's one example.
What about that, Representative Stamm? We're working under this assumption that we have to cut, but isn't more spending more income for somebody in this state, and that has an effect on improving economic development?
I was pumping up here my records on actual spending here. People would be shocked, for example, at what the taxpayers spend per student per year at UNC. First of all, the 16 campuses of the University of North Carolina, people don't realize even if you get no financial aid at all, the taxpayers, who typically are less wealthy than you are giving you $13,000 per year per student. And we're first in the nation, and yet they talk about how, you know, poorly we support our universities. Then at K-12 level, by the way, I will agree with them on community colleges. We don't do enough there. The K-12 level, we spend about $9,000 per kid per year. Now, let's say a typical class of 25 students, 9 times 25, $225,000 per classroom. You know, the teacher gets about 60 of that.
Well, I mean,
how much is enough?
Well, is that an argument for spending less or being more judicious about where the money goes?
Well, being more judicious about where it goes, but we certainly don't need to drastically increase it. And, you know, last year they talked about how we cut K-12, you know, just to the bone, and actually the figures I've got right here showed a slight increase last year over the previous year. I mean, we are coming out of 5 years of recessionary budgets, but we were actually able to increase state spending at K-12 a little bit last year.
Senator West, I'm going to ask you, Mark Binker, actually, to give us a preview, because we've been talking about the income side. We haven't really heard the budget yet, any of the budgets that have been or that might be presented. They're coming soon. Can you give us a preview? Any idea what we're looking at, Mark Binker, when it comes to spending and the budgets that we'll hear in the next week or so?
One thing that we know is that the Senate budget is going due to be out on Sunday night, and they have said that they are going to basically have a bottom line number that is in concert with their tax plan. And I think it's important when you discuss budget and taxes and you're talking about tax reform, you know, tax reform is not necessarily a budget cut or a budget increase. And in fact, in an ideal circumstance, it's revenue neutral. You're raising about the same money as you do now. You're changing the way that money is raised. So that's sort of one caution to talk about with taxes. As far as the budget goes, I mean, we have not seen very many of the details. The Senate today put out a provision that says we're going to ask for some changes in how the federal government lets us deal with Medicaid. That's as far as what we know goes. What we know, I don't think it will surprise anybody to see us see the Senate produce a budget that is kind of small C conservative in terms of any increases to spending. And I think you'll continue to see what the governor proposed earlier this year, which is putting more money into savings reserves, taking care of things like state buildings, not doing huge increases in terms of the amount of money put into various programs, but trying in the mind of the budget writers to maybe spend that money more effectively.
All right, Mark, we are out of time, but I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Mark Binker, multimedia investigative reporter for WRAL, Republican Representative Paul Stamm, and Democratic Senator Mike Woodard. Thanks so much for being on the program. Coming up next, the music of Dead Tongues. Stay tuned.